Welcome back to the Original Gangsters Podcast. I'm your co-host, Jimmy Bucciolato, here with my co-conspirator, Scott Bernstein.
Hey now.
And before we get into it, I just want to mention our social media again, at Gangster Podcast. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have a presence on TikTok now. And I just want to thank everyone, those of you who follow us, and appreciate your feedback and your support and, you know, your comments and questions. I appreciate your patience. We try to get back to your questions as fast as we can. So thanks for all the love and the support. Check us out at Gangster Podcast. Anyhow, we have a pretty exciting episode, I think. Scott and I have both watched The Many Saints of Newark. So that's what this is going to be about. We're just going to break it down, man. We're going to give our review. So
we're going to deep dive the new David Chase, right. Quote unquote, masterpiece.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen it yet, we're getting into it.
Yeah. And there's going to be spoilers. So if you haven't watched it, I would recommend getting a view of the film before you consume this podcast.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So we watched it. Scott watched it a couple of days before me, I think. And I know he was chomping at the bit
to get Jimmy to engage with me. But for our audience, you should know that we are fresh out of the box. We had a couple texts. Exchange about what we felt about it, but we really haven't discussed it
until right now.
I've been marinating for about 5 days. Jimmy's been now 48 hours plus.
Yeah.
72 hours.
Yeah.
And
so you're going to hear it. You're going to hear it live.
Yeah. I'm going to give it to you raw and unadulterated. And let me just start off by saying a couple things. First, I'm not going to bury the lead here. For someone like David Chase, who is, he's a GOAT. He's one of the all-time greats when it comes to storytelling in the true crime genre. He has a reputation, a legacy, a career that is above reproach. You know, no matter what he does, you're not going to be able to put any smudges on his legacy and his greatness. But I will tell you, after watching this film, something that I believed after consuming the television series is that while there are some creative forces in the world of entertainment, I think comes to mind Scorsese, Tarantino, that love their audience and want to please their audience.
Yeah.
I feel like David Chase is someone that at his core, in his heart, has contempt for the audience. And that has always been difficult for me to swallow in some of the ways that he decides to go about manipulating certain narratives and doing certain certain creative aspects of the Sopranos canon, the story of the DeMeo crime family. Some of it I feel like he is just either intentionally trying to tweak the fan base or just being overly self-indulgent where he's like, this is my sandbox and my toys and my big wheel, and I'm going to play with it however I want. And I don't care if, you know, you love watching me play, you're never going to actually get a chance to ride my big wheel.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you think you're kind of addressing that now, but do you think it's at a subconscious level or he's consciously
know.
Like,
I don't know.
Dismissive of his, you know what I mean?
I don't know.
Because it could be either.
So I walk away and I, as a Sopranos nerd, I give the film a 7.5. As a just a film critic looking at it as a standalone movie, I give it a 6, I think. Yeah. And I was part of this is my own fault. I get my expectations up so high, and then inevitably, there have been a couple pieces of content over the last 15 years when I've embarked on this career as an expert in the world of criminology and gangsters and the mafia, and you know, I get so excited. I haven't been as excited for anything.
The Irishman.
I wasn't excited for the Irishman.
Oh, you were? Oh, because I was trying to think of what examples you were talking about.
No, because I knew what the Irishman was going to be.
Oh, that's right. For the book, yeah.
I probably haven't been this excited to consume a piece of true crime content or just crime content, I guess, would be since either American Gangster or The Departed.
Yeah, I saw both of those in the theater.
I was blown away.
Oh, yeah.
One of my greatest movie-making or watching experiences of my life.
Yeah.
American Gangster, I was very disappointed in my first watching of it. But as I've gotten further away from it, I love it.
And yeah, I think I like it. Just,
once
than
I
you
get
did
away, once I can disassociate the and this is going to dovetail with some of our conversation, by the
sure,
way.
Sure, yeah.
Because Frank Lucas pops up as a character in many Saints of Newark.
Yeah, you called that.
But when I, when I first saw American Gangster, I was like, I had such a hard time swallowing the history they were feeding us.
Yeah.
That it took away from the entertainment value. But when I can just pretend like it's a fictional story, it's a really entertaining film.
I think so. Yeah.
So getting back to the Many Saints of Newark, let's first talk, or Jimmy, we can go in whatever direction you want to go into. But you can give your kind of opening statement. But then after you give your initial thoughts, I want to kind of do a things that we really liked about the film to start with. And then I can go into my airing of the grievances to make a Seinfeld reference.
Yeah, yeah, nice. My opening statement, I like the way you put that. Yeah, I would say that I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I would say that if you are a Sopranos fan, you should see the movie. I think you will like the movie. You may not love it, but you will probably like the movie. And if you're not a Sopranos fan and you're just watching it because of the hype and you're expecting a standalone gangster film, I also agree with you. You're definitely going to be underwhelmed. I don't think as a standalone gangster film, it doesn't really
even people that have context, I feel like the film lacks context. So if you're someone who's coming in there completely blind and don't really know anything about the mythology of the Sopranos, you're just going to be totally lost.
I think you'll be lost, and I'm not sure the film is that interesting for non Sopranos people. But I think I like the way you divided it into your ratings, because I agree with you. I don't think you can talk about this movie as just, you know, this is just for everyone. I think it matters if you're a Sopranos nerd or if you're not. I really agree with you that you're gonna view this film through different ways. So if you want to start with like some of the things you liked about it, I like that.
So there was a excellent piece of content within what turned out to be a good piece of content. But I think there were the seeds there for something incredibly special that for whatever reason didn't blossom fully development process, I guess. So things I really liked. Some of the acting performances were outstanding.
Yeah.
Ray Liotta gave one of the best performances of his career. And frankly, and we can give spoilers here. I thought he was taken off the screen way too soon. I needed a crescendo, like a slow boil until you see Dickie Moltisanti, who's the central character in this film, which to me was one of the problems, but I'll get to that in a second or in a little bit. I think you needed to kind of see a development of this animosity or bitterness he had towards his dad before he kind of flips on him and kills him. It kind of came out of nowhere. 100% agree. So although you could see from just the 20 minutes on screen that you see Ray Liotta, you could see how he might not get along with his son.
Oh yeah, sure.
But you just didn't really.
Yeah.
So, but I loved Ray Liotta. I wanted him for a 2-hour movie. I wanted him more than 20 minutes. And you got a little bit of that where they made a decision to have that character play or have Ray Liotta play twins.
Right.
And his character, the character that he played in prison was good, too.
I actually like that one better, but yeah. we'll get to that in a minute.
Vera Farmiga.
Oh, yeah.
As Livia Soprano was killed. Amazing. Michael Gandolfini was tremendous.
Killed it.
I was just so pleasantly surprised by the ease that he took on that role with. He just slipped into his dad's shoes, and it just felt so seamless.
Yeah.
And for a guy that's never acted before,
yeah.
Wow. It'd be like for a coach never coached before, and he takes over for Nick Saban, or he takes over for Bill Belichick, and his first season, he wins a national championship.
Yeah, like what happened with the Tigers and Brad Ausmus. Yeah. Oh, no, wait, that didn't happen. Sorry, that's for the Detroit fans out there.
So I thought that a lot of the acting in the film was great. John Bernthal as Johnny Boy Soprano, he commands the screen every scene.
Talk about a guy who deserved more screen time.
Yeah, I wanted more Johnny Soprano.
Yeah.
I thought just being back in the world of the Sopranos just felt at home again.
Yes.
And it was like this, you're revisiting like your grandma's house after being away for 15 years. So just being back in that orbit was amazing. And you definitely got the feel of the show in the film. They did a great job of keeping that authenticity, that angle of authenticity.
Yeah.
There were some other authenticity factors that I took issue with. But in terms of recreating that aura or that that palpable on-screen feeling that pops off the screen and kind of jumps into your lap, whether you consume this in a theater or in your living room. And then I liked... Now, I'm going to say I like something because I liked the approach and I liked the idea, but I did not like the execution, which was the decision to manipulate what had been the standard canon, what we had been told in the show that Dickie Moltisanti, who was Christopher's father and had been a mentor or father-like figure to Tony, had been killed by a dirty cop named Barry Haydu, and that it had resulted from a feud that he had with a gangster named Jilly Ruffalo over a prison beef. And David Chase had spoken about this in interviews before the film was released, and I kind of like where he was going with it, where he was saying, listen, there's going to be some tweaks in what you see in the way this film plays out, where things that were brought to you as fact in the show really were just fact from that character's point of view.
Right, their perspective.
Perspective. Yeah. And everyone's memory is different.
Yeah, yeah.
I know one of the scenes in the film that did this was recreating when a story that had been told in the show was when Johnny Boy got so upset with his wife that he shoots her through the beehive in her hair, the bouffant. And in the television show, it's recounted as Johnny Boy and Livia and Junior and his guma were out on the town and Johnny Boy shoots through the beehive. But in reality, at least in the movie, it was Dickie Moltisanti and his wife, Christopher's mother, that were in the car with him. And David Chase has said that's because the way the story got relayed, or the way it was remembered by Janice, who was telling the story.
And she was just a kid
in the final season. She told it as Junior was there, but in reality, Dickie was there. So
I buy that. Buy that.
No, I liked that. I like the idea that we had been led to believe for the last 15 plus years that Dickie had been killed by this Jilly Ruffalo who had been referenced in that one part of the show. We didn't know who he was.
Right.
But we find out in reality it was Junior Soprano who had put the hit in motion. So I like the idea that we were going to change – what we had been led to believe, but I did not like putting Junior Soprano. It didn't make any sense. There was no they tried to make you think that Junior was so upset by the fact that Dickie Moltisanti had laughed at him when he slipped on the ice coming out of a funeral parlor, that somehow made Junior so angry that he wanted to murder Dickie Moltisanti. And I think you could have played with it in a way that would have really fit. And if you would have made the person that put the order out being Johnny Boy Soprano.
Yeah.
Then it would have given that whole Tony mentoring Christopher a whole different dimension. And I think you could have built within the storyline some type of budding rivalry between Johnny Boy and Dickie, where there was resentment between them.
Yeah, because there was supposed to be that, sorry to interrupt, but that resentment between Dickie and Junior, but it was so subtle, almost to not even exist.
It didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
But it would have made sense if you find out that Tony's dad was the one who actually killed or had Dickie Moltisanti killed. Yeah. Even if Tony didn't know it.
Right, because he may not have.
Right.
He might, you know how that goes. You know that better than anyone. Even people who are close to you, the subterfuge, right? You give them, you feed them stories because you don't, and you want those stories getting out so that no one really knows what really happened.
I liked the Easter eggs. They were kind of peppered throughout. You had to be a real Sopranos nerd to catch some of them.
Yep.
One of the first ones that I caught was that the young black street hustler that they were chasing at the beginning of the film was called Leon Overall.
Oh, they're the cop.
And you find out, well, I guess you found out 15 years ago, but you find out later, if you're going by the timeline of the show, you know, 10 years after that or 15 years after that, Tony Soprano makes his bones in the DeMeo crime family by killing an African-American bookmaker named Willie Overall.
Right.
So I'm guessing David Chase is telling the fans that this Leon Overall was related in this African-American street figure was somehow related to Willie Overall.
Was that the cop that pulled him over? Wasn't that his last name too, or no?
Who pulled who over?
Remember the African-American state trooper who pulls over Tony? And at first, Tony kind of likes him, but then...
Oh,
like,
then he gets him fired?
Yeah, Charles, he gets him fired. Wasn't his...
No, that was Charles Dutton.
Yeah, I know, but wasn't his last name Overall, too?
I don't remember that.
Oh, okay. All right, whatever. I'll look it up.
I just know that Willie Overall was...
Tony, that's how he made his bones.
Tony killed Willie Overall on Labor Day 1982.
Right.
And in one of the final seasons of the show, you find out that Larry Boy Barisi is cooperating and that they're digging up Willie Overall's body. And Tony... and Paulie have to go on the lam because Paulie was with him, and they go to Florida. And then at the end of the show, they find out that Larry Boy had fed the government false information, had told him that Jackie Aprile had actually murdered Willie Overall. But you didn't know anything about Willie Overall other than that he was a black bookmaker. And there's a scene where they recreate Tony and Paulie shooting him.
But we don't even know what he did.
You don't really know what he did.
Right.
But I thought it was pretty clear early on when they said that guy's name was Leon Overall. I'm like, I, as a Sopranos nerd, noticed the shout out to Willie Overall. So things like that.
I was wrong, by the way. You know, Charles Dutton, it's Leon Wilmore.
His name was Leon.
Yeah. So I was wrong. So whatever.
So Jimmy, tell us what were your favorite things about the movie?
I agree with you. And this is one of the things I did text you when I watched it I agree with you 100%. The best parts of the movie, it's worth watching it just to watch the family unit.
Yeah.
Just to watch young Tony with his parents, to see Junior, to see Janice, to see them together.
It was great. Last thing I'll say.
Yeah.
And then, or last thing I'll say on my, I guess my second opening statement, and then turn it over to Jimmy, is that what, you know, how Jimmy just opened that is... What he just said was, to me, that's what the movie should have been.
Yes.
It just should have been a Tony Soprano origin story.
Yeah.
And that would have been the most natural fit for this. But again, David Chase, I think, bristles against giving the public what they want.
Yeah.
And was like, okay, I'll do this, but I want to do it my way. I want to make it centered around Dickie Moltisanti, and then I'll throw you guys a bone. I'll give you a couple scenes of a young Tony Soprano. But it was very underdeveloped, especially if you were looking into any insight into how Tony Soprano got led into a life of crime. I mean, you see him hijack a fucking ice cream truck as a gag.
He's sort of just doing juvenile things, but it doesn't lead you to believe he's going to be a hardcore criminal.
And the idea that Dickie Moltisanti mentored him, that wasn't true either.
No.
He was a father figure to him.
Sure, because Johnny's in prison for a few years.
But he dies when Tony's like 14 or 15 before Tony even decides to become a criminal.
And quite frankly, when you watch the film, Dickie only takes on that role reluctantly.
Yeah.
He doesn't remember. He's like, Junior's the uncle. Like, let him do it. And then Livia, he's like, well, he doesn't listen to Junior and you should do it. So even that, he sort of reluctantly. But yeah, I agree with you. I love the scenes with the original family. That should have been the, I think, the focus of the movie. And in many ways, I think this is a problem, is it does, when you view it, it views as like two different movies. You see David Chase's vision, which is he wants to make a movie about Dickie Moltisanti and race relations in the 1960s. And you could tell, at least in my perspective, that the studio is thinking, well, yeah, but people want the Sopranos. They want Tony. And so the sort of like, they kind of coexist in the same film, but they're never really like, it doesn't really integrate to a whole cohesive
whole. It sounded okay to me when it was being pitched to me, but after watching it, what was so great about Dickie Moltisanti?
No,
And Alessandro Nivola, it was a controversial casting because Nivola was a niche actor, who's been around for a while, but has never really made it big. And David Chase, went to bat for this guy and he was cast. And I'm not saying he wasn't good. He was good, and he was really good in some parts.
Sure.
But there was nothing about his character that I thought deserved, a two-hour film.
No,
I
agree.
He would have been fine as a side character in a story about the Soprano family of 1967 to 73, where Johnny Boy and young Tony and Junior and Livia and all that, you're seeing all those dynamics.
Sure.
But
I agree. That would have been enjoyable because then, like you're saying, for like the Soprano nerds, we could have been like, oh, that's Christopher's dad. That's cool. But I agree with you. To carry the movie, no, it doesn't. It just doesn't work. And maybe that's the writer's fault. Maybe it's not his fault. But it just, I agree with you. It sort of falls flat. But one other thing I liked, and I'm curious to hear what you think, is I like, and I think we agree on this, but maybe not. I liked the subplot about the black gangsters and the civil unrest and things like that.
I thought it was, again, underdeveloped.
Yeah, right. If anything, right, there should have been more context, more. Yeah.
And for a creator in David Chase, a storyteller, and for a show that always hung its hat on the authenticity factor, I will always, call BS, I guess, when I see a storytelling group, in this case, the people behind The Sopranos, who hold themselves up to that gold standard of authenticity. But when they start to slip, like for me, the way that the ending was of the whole show, which I had issues with that I think are beyond what other people had issues with, and it goes to the whole David Chase has contempt for his audience and lacking authenticity, I'm going to call him on it. And so with the subplot of the DeMeo crew in this, I mean, it was a war with the black mafia of the time, led by Harold, who had been Dickie Moltisanti's kind of right hand and running his numbers business in the black neighborhoods, and eventually breaks off. And he killed, am I mistaken? He killed a couple. I mean, if they weren't made guys, they were...
Yeah, they were really connected guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in one scene...
Joey Diaz.
He goes, takes the pump shotgun and starts attacking Johnny Boy and Dickie. And then
That would be a death sentence.
Right, and then he just, at the end of the show, he's the one who's on top.
He's thriving.
And he's, that made no sense to me.
Yeah.
And Johnny Boy's still alive?
Yeah.
Unless, Johnny Boy's not dead.
Unless this is going to be like another TV, like, you know what I mean? Like, unless they're going to continue that story.
Yeah.
It wouldn't end that way.
Right.
There has to be more, otherwise, you're right, it's a flawed.
Like, Johnny Boy's not going to kill this guy for trying to kill him, regardless of the two soldiers that he killed.
Right. But some of the things that I liked about it was I liked the slow evolution of the character, where he starts off, he's down with these Italian guys, but they're not down with him.
Right.
Like, he doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, they kind of, like, did it to themselves, because he's happy to work with Moltisanti then, but they're condescending and they're racist.
Dickie did it to himself when he said, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, right.
You let this guy piss on your leg.
Right, right, right. And I think Dickie was saying that to impress, or not to, but you could, I love that scene, because you can tell that Dickie, in a way, is sort of fond of this guy. But he sees how the other guys react when they bring him into the club.
Part of the canon is they had played high school football together.
Yes, right.
They had been in the same backfield.
Yeah, right. And so you can tell that Dickie is sort of personally fond of this guy. But when he comes in and that guy's real chummy with Dickie, you see the look on Junior and Paulie, and, like, they don't like that. And then all of a sudden Dickie changes. Like, his body language and everything started changing. And Harold is like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I thought we were boys, and you're going to fucking condescend me? That I like, because that's real. You know how those old fucking Italian guys
would have liked to have more of the screenplay, more airtime to that brewing conflict,
which
you saw in little spats.
The most interesting things about Dickie in that movie, in my opinion, are his interactions with Harold.
Right.
I
did not need to see a scene that took up, you know, 30 seconds of him coaching blind kids playing baseball. I mean,
that's
you're trying to show us that, you know, every gangster is multidimensional and they're not all bad people. Yeah, we know. That's what the whole point of the Sopranos television show was about.
Do you think, by the way, now we're going to spend more time at it than it deserved to be in the movie, but remember when he's done telling that story, Ray Liotta's not there.
Yeah, you don't know if did he even make that up?
Right. Did he imagine that or what? Right. I mean, he likes to imagine that he would do something like that. But I also like one thing I liked about the subplot with African-American gangsters, something you and I have talked about on the show before, is this is very, I think it's fascinating. So you have the civil rights movement, something that, you know, a lot of us think is a positive, progressive thing. But there's this sort of perverse underside to that, which is to say that the gangsters are also saying, like, yeah, you know what? That's right. Why should we be secondary?
There definitely was a parallel. I mean, in Detroit, there was a parallel.
It's fascinating.
Where a lot of the African-American gangsters jumped onto the Black Power movement and used it as a way to distance themselves from the Italians.
Yeah, if we're going to have illicit rackets in our neighborhood, then we should control it.
Right.
Which is fascinating, because in the sense of, in a lot of ways, that's inconsistent with the civil rights message, which is about empowerment and, you know,
it's just take care of your health. Misconstruing.
Right, yeah, right.
What, like, the message was.
Right, right. Like, the message wasn't like, prostitution and drugs and gambling is good as long as we're controlling the action. Right, that wasn't the point, right? They did, but nevertheless, that was part of it. We talked about that with Crazy Joey Gallo, and he exploited that to an extent by aligning himself with black gangsters. So all of that was really interesting, and I agree with you that should have been unpacked even more. And I think to the extent that we're saying Dickie Moltisanti was sort of this flawed protagonist, the best scenes with him, in my opinion, are his interactions with that kind of tension, the interactions with the black gangster. Let me think, anything else
One thing I really liked that I forgot to mention was how they recreated a scene right out of the Sopranos television show.
Which one?
You remember, again, you have to be a Sopranos nerd, but if you remember in the first season or the second season, one of the first episodes where Tony's having a flashback and he's talking to Dr. Melfi, and there's the scene where Tony sneaks in the back of the car and Johnny Boy is taking Janice to the fair, But, Janice thinks she's going there for like a daddy-daughter date.
Right, but
when in reality he's just using the back room of the fair office to run rackets.
Right,
and Tony gets to see his dad and his uncle, let off in handcuffs.
Yeah,
And then they recreated that exact scene.
Yeah, I think I may be wrong, but I think there is a slight difference though. I think.
Johnny Boy doesn't make the comment
right.
to the police officer. Right. One of the other guys did.
Right, which fits in with David Chase's theory that Tony's memory might not be perfect in the TV show.
Yeah,
but I agree with you. I liked all the Easter eggs. I thought that was really fun. In terms of like some of the things we transitioned to, we could jump all over the place at this point. But some of the things that I didn't like, and we've already kind of unpacked some of that, but. I just didn't find Dicky Moltisanti that compelling. I just didn't. Like, I thought it was cool. Oh, this is Christopher's father. We used to hear about him. And I don't know whose fault that was. I don't know if it's the actor or was it the writers or was it David Chase's fault? Maybe that character just shouldn't have been the center of this universe in the first place.
This is going to get into two of my beefs. First off, I didn't like the way that they weaved Paulie, Silvio, and Big Pussy into the film.
That's like, inconsistent with the timeline, too.
Right, so there are a couple issues I have.
Yeah.
First, I'm like, okay, if you're going to bring these guys into our world, our new world of the new world of Sopranos, which is actually an old world of the Sopranos, but you know what we're talking
chronologically. Yeah.
So if you're going to do that, then do it. But if you want it to be a gimmick, then just do it for a scene or two scenes, and you can keep it as a gimmick.
It's like an Easter egg,
kind of thing. But if you're going to do it where they're in multiple scenes, which they were in a lot of scenes.
Yeah.
But you didn't give them anything to do other than just be there in the background. And then you were kind of confusing what you had told us the entire television show, which was that at least Paulie and Big Pussy had come up in Johnny Boy Soprano's crew.
Right.
Not Nicky Moltisanti's crew.
No, right.
And then Silvio was presented as a contemporary of Tony, even if he was just a couple. I think you could have believed that he was a couple years older than Tony, but he wasn't like a different generation of gangster than Tony.
He seemed like he was Dicky's consigliere.
Yeah. and he wasn't just like there. He like was playing like a – and then the – and it was just this – it was like a Saturday Night Live impression of – Stephen Van Zandt doing Sil.
Yeah, our engineer, Mark, we were talking before we recorded it. That was one of the things he least liked about it was those, he felt like they were like caricatures.
So I'm just like, and I'm thinking to myself, well, Paulie played a big role in not just Johnny Boy's mob life, but in Tony's life. Tony talks about idolizing Paulie when Paulie was Johnny Boy's driver.
Yeah, so, I mean, Paulie could have been, I think of the timeline, Paulie was supposed to be older. I mean, Paulie could have been part of that scene.
And I would have been okay with that.
Yeah.
But they didn't give the character anything to work with. The only one of those characters that really have lines was Silvio.
Right.
And then it felt out of place. I'm like, wait, so Silvio was a made guy?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Back at that point?
There's no way. Well, if we can talk about that, because I there's some things that I'm unclear about. And maybe this is part of the problem. I get the sense from watching that film that Johnny Boy is part of Dickie's crew. That Johnny's not even the captain. That doesn't it seem like Dickie?
I couldn't tell. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
who's with who?
Right. It's difficult because I mean, I guess Johnny's in prison for a lot of the film, but remember, he seems even when he gets out of prison, he's talking to Junior. He's saying, "Oh, Dicky Moltisanti. Now that's a guy who knows what it's." And so. I got the feeling
that he was in a different crew. That it was crew. Like, this is our crew, and I've been gone for 4 years, and you're not handling your business. Meanwhile, this other crew with Dicky Moltisanti is thriving.
Yeah, and
that's
how I interpreted it. No, that makes sense. And then I suppose if you're going to try to keep the logic here, when Moltisanti gets killed, maybe Johnny absorbs those guys, and then that's how Paulie and them come up under Johnny. That's plausible, but I still think the timeline doesn't work. Maybe I think for Paulie he could, because he's older. For pussy too, but Silvio is supposed to be a contemporary of Tony's. Maybe not the same grade, but more or less because
Ralphie's saying that Jackie, Sil,
yes,
him and Tony were like, they called themselves the Sixth. They were joking.
Yeah.
We thought we were the Sixth family.
Right. And that is inconsistent with the Silvio we saw in the film.
Season two, Christopher makes a mention of Big Pussy getting, when it was his time, it was his time. And he stepped up in the unrest of 83 was what they said.
Yeah.
So making it seem that whether he was made or his reputation was enhanced by something that happened in 83. Meanwhile, we're back here in 67 and then in 71, and he's playing a role.
So I suppose Pussy could have been a criminal in 1967, but would he have been running with made guys like Johnny and Dickie Moltisanti? I don't think so. How old was he supposed to be? Right. Like 21 or something in this movie?
Why didn't we see Richie Aprile?
Yes. Yeah.
Why didn't we see Feach LaManna?
Yeah, those were the older dudes, yeah.
Why didn't we see Buffalo Ray Curto?
Yeah, right.
Didn't we see Gene Pontecorvo? I mean, there were as many Easter eggs as they gave us. I wanted more.
Yeah.
Like, even if it was just like one scene where Tony...
We got one Hesh. There was one Hesh.
There was a reference.
Reference.
We said, my friend Hesh.
Yeah.
We should have seen Hesh.
Yeah, that would have been cool. But yeah, there could have been more Easter eggs. But I'm also confused about... Hollywood Dick Moltisanti, the narration is he's not a made guy.
Right, but he's made a ton of money.
But he's a big earner.
And has a ton of respect.
But he seems like a heavyweight dude in that crew. And like you and I have talked about, in Detroit, Chicago, maybe that makes sense. But in Jersey, does that make sense that a non-made guy carries that much weight?
So then are you supposed to think that Dickie was made?
Yeah, right. I don't know. Right, that's what
so
I mean.
So Dickie, even though... Hollywood Dick was making a lot of money, but if Dickie had his button, Dickie would outrank his dad.
Right. And is that why he can kill him and get away and know like he'll yeah. probably
no
get
one,
away with
by
it?
The way, no one really said anything.
No, except for the uncle kind of saw through it.
Right.
Which was kind of an interesting scene. But so I was confused about like his position and all this. Although I actually like Ray Liotta as the uncle better because I just thought that was an impressive performance. Because at first when you told me he's going to play twins, I was like, oh, that's a gimmick. That's cheesy. But then when you see it, he lost weight, like his demeanor, like he's a great actor. Like you really bought that, like, yeah, that's not the same dude. Even though it looks like Ray Liotta, he lost weight, his demeanor, everything, his style was very different. And it made you think like, yeah, okay, this dude seems like a dude who's been in prison for a long time, like. You know, he's more chill. He's into jazz, Buddhism. But one thing that I want to ask you that I had an issue with, and not a major issue, it's not a deal breaker, but to your point, the authenticity, if we're going to, take it seriously and hold him to that standard, he says he's in prison for killing a made guy. I have a difficult time buying that, and you tell me if I'm off base here. This is 1967. Is that when he first goes to prison to see him? 67 or 70.
Yeah, when he goes and sees him.
Yeah, so
67.
So the implication is that he's been in prison for what, a couple decades? So the 1940s, you know as well as I do, a lot of mafia murders did not go. I mean, they went unsolved.
He would have never been arrested. He would have never tried,
precisely
convicted precisely. And sent to prison. Right, it would have been street justice. 100%.
I'm glad that it's not just me because away I had an issue. I was like, this story. Wait a minute, this doesn't make sense to me. Like that, right? That he would have never been prosecuted, and first of all, the DeMeo family wouldn't have let it get to that point anyhow. They would have whacked him, right? Now, is that a deal breaker? No. But to your point, those little things they used to get right in the TV show, and that's why guys like us revered and love that TV show because even the little things, you're like, yeah, that's how it really goes down. Right? So doesn't it seem like sort of reckless for them to let some of these things just...
I don't know why I'm thinking of this, but, one of those little things that I remember noticing that I thought they hit a grand slam on was it was one of the season openers where Hesh and his son-in-law get attacked.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a miscommunication, and one of the Lupertazzi's guys didn't
realize. Yeah, the
realize,
hairdo, right? Jerry.
Right, Jerry right, yeah. Torciano. And, I mean, Hesh was no small timer. I mean,
right.
Hesh was right. as high as you could get in the world of non-made, yeah. non-Italians in that world.
Right.
And it's like they discuss the issue. It gets kind of put to bed pretty quickly. And then they're like, all right, can we move on to something more important? And it was literally said, can we move on to something
that's
more
right.
important?
I remember that scene. Yeah, you're like, God damn.
And it's like, wow, so that's not important. That you, this is one of Tony's best friends. He almost killed him and his son-in-law.
Yeah, and Tony was like, yeah, he was yeah. like very blasé about it too. Like, yeah, what, like, okay.
So, but I'm saying that to me, that got it. That hit it, that hit the nail on the head.
Yes.
Because that's
yeah.
how it is.
That's right, yeah.
Because if that same thing had happened to a made guy.
Yeah.
That there would have been like 20 sit downs over.
Oh, yeah,
someone
of course.
Would have got whacked.
Probably, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so, right. So they would get a lot of things right, those little things, subtle things. And in this movie, it seems like they overlooked some of those things, like we're talking about the timeline, other just like mafia protocol, things like that. Another thing I didn't like was I thought the whole thing with the Guma was just didn't add anything to the story. And I think she's a fine actor. I'm not trying to take a shot. I can't remember her name, but she's an Italian actor, and she's fine. I'm not, you know, but I mean, I wasn't buying it. I wasn't buying the love triangle. And so there's two things. I want
wasn't to even really a love triangle.
No, because he kills the dad before it can even become a love triangle. But a couple of things with the authenticity, I'm not buying. And I know I'm about to walk through like a land mine here, but I don't think a Sicilian immigrant woman in 1970 is having an affair with an African American gangster.
But and it was totally dropped out of the ceiling
right.
from nowhere.
Right.
Again, no context.
Right.
No follow up.
Right.
It's like if you're gonna do that, you at least have to let us understand how that. What were the dominoes that fell for her to land in bed with Harold? But instead, they just flash to a scene
yeah.
where they're in bed together.
Right.
You get about 2 minutes of it.
Right.
Then you don't hear about it at all until she confesses
right.
to Dickie about it, and Dickie flips his lid
and
kills her.
Which she wouldn't be that stupid. She would never tell him that. I don't think so. But and I just want to be clear because I don't want the cancel police. I'm not saying that that's okay. I'm saying that cultural norms were different then in 1970, and it's highly improbable to me that a Sicilian immigrant woman would be having an affair with
a
black gangster.
I'm not disagreeing with you from a socioacademic perspective. I'm saying I would be okay with it if you wanted to write it into the script and give it its due attention.
Right, and it's interesting.
And tell us how that happened. And,
right.
And develop it.
Yeah.
There were so many underdeveloped storylines and story threads
yeah.
that I know, again, if someone was going to, you know, play the devil's advocate, they would say, well, that was part of The Sopranos, too. David Chase would kind of tease out a thread, and you think that thread was going somewhere,
yeah.
and it would just kind of die on the vine, and it wouldn't be referenced again.
Yeah.
And Pine Barrens is a perfect example.
And a lot of times that worked, the way he did
Everyone
that.
Everyone thought that, like, the Russian who disappeared in the Pine Barrens episode was going to pop back up at some point, and just never got resolved.
Or Melfi never telling Tony that this guy sexually assaulted her.
Yeah.
That was one where the audience was clamoring, like, please tell Tony.
So
he goes and whacks this motherfucker, and they let that die out, too. Storyline.
So some people would say that's consistent, but I had a bigger issue with the lack of context than the actual decision to write that into the narrative.
But even like I didn't feel like Moltisanti and the character the Sicilian woman, or actually she was probably Italian, right? She wasn't Sicilian.
She was Miss Provolone in 1967.
Yeah, I think they were saying I think she was supposed to be like Napolitan because the Moltisantis are they're not Sicilian. I think they're like the Sopranos. But anyhow, I wasn't buying the chemistry. There was no chemistry between like it was a major storyline in the film, and I just wasn't is it just me? Am I like not romantic enough or something? I just didn't buy it. I didn't buy it.
The studio gave notes and said, we need to have, you know, a love interest. We need to have some romance going on here. Because you weren't getting it from Tony. I mean, you see Carmella for 30 seconds. She doesn't have any lines.
Right. That was cool. That was a fun. I mean, I was cool to see her, though. You know, like.
He starts fighting with Jackie. And you don't really even understand that other than he has a temper.
I didn't even realize it was
That's supposed to be Jackie and Prill.
Yeah, like, I know afterwards, but.
Jackie and Carmella are waiting for Tony to get off the phone. And he's taking a long time. And then he finds out that Dickie had kind of played him. And then Jackie says, he calls him Joe Jerkoff.
Which, by the way, when you're kids, you fight with your friends all the time. So, but right. It's believable. But I didn't realize it was Jackie in the moment.
Yeah.
Is it Gabriella Piazza? Is that the woman who
played? Actress.
So she was fine.
No. Gabriella Piazza played Christopher's mother.
Oh, and she was great. She was great, too.
Dickie's wife, Joanne.
The mother in The Sopranos, though, is very different. And the mother in the movie is like happy-go-lucky, kind of. And in some ways, I thought at first I was like, "Well, that doesn't seem consistent."
You're talking about Livia?
Yeah, no, I'm all over the place here. I'm talking about Christopher's mother, Joanne.
Oh, Christopher's mom, yeah, Joanne.
The Joanne in the film is very different than Joanne in the TV. And at first I was like, "Well, that's inconsistent." But then I thought about it, and I'm like, "No, okay, maybe this makes sense because over time, single mom gets jaded, you get older, she might have been different when she was younger.
And there were at least two different Joanne Maltasantes. There was the Joanne Maltasante that you meet in season two when Christopher gets shot.
It was two different actors?
And
really?
She meets...
Oh, I didn't remember that.
She sees Tony in the hospital and says, you need to make someone pay for whoever did
this. Yeah, I remember that scenario, but I didn't realize it was a different actor.
But then as the series goes on, it's a different woman that plays Christopher's mom.
That's who I'm thinking of in my head then. Because when I think of her, I think of... The intervention.
Yeah.
You know, maybe smack some goddamn sense.
Yeah.
Is it Leslie Margarita? I can't think.
Who plays the actress from the show?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not positive.
I don't know.
It wasn't a major actor.
I don't know, whatever. But I'm sorry. I don't mean to be dismissive of the female characters. But she was a great actor. But I'm just saying it didn't do anything for me in terms of the writing. Like, I didn't sense any chemistry between the two. He kills his dad over her, and I'm like, so what? And then he kills her over Harold, and I'm like, yeah, I don't care. Like, and those were supposed to be like shocking, tragic. You could tell that's what they were going for, and I'm like, yeah, but I'm not invested in these characters. I don't care.
And I think if David Chase was sitting here, he'd be like, I would say, well, Junior had no reason to kill Dickie.
Let's get into that.
And he would be like, well, you know, Dickie was able to skate away from all of the, you know, the instances that he should have been caught and either put in prison or murdered. So isn't it appropriate that, you know, I'm just playing the devil's advocate here if you wanted to make this argument where you could be like, well, kind of like with Christopher. Like, he should have been killed all these other times, but
yeah,
he ended up being killed in a car accident where Tony, you know, puts his hand over his mouth.
Yeah, which I didn't like either.
Right, but. So with like this, he'd be like, yo, so Dickie kind of gets murdered in a fluke.
Yeah, I mean, by the way.
As opposed to what he should have been murdered for.
Michela De Rossi is the name of the woman who was playing Moltisanti's Gumar. But anyhow, so let's talk about the way that went down. So,
and I didn't like, and honestly, I like Corey Stoll a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't love his interpretation of the Junior Soprano.
Oh, I liked it, I didn't see an issue with that, but
I liked the guy. I don't know who the hell the actor was, but the actor that played him
on the TV show.
In the flashbacks,
he nailed it.
Yeah
his body language. He was good. The first time you ever see Junior in that flashback,
yeah,
you loved
you're like,
it
you're like that's Junior. 40 years ago.
I'll concede that that dude is better, but I thought he was fine in the film, but
I wanted to be funnier, because to me Junior was my favorite character on the show.
Instead they just sort of
recycled some of Junior's old line.
Right.
He didn't have the makings of a varsity athlete.
But I would say I always felt that the story that Tony told Christopher, I always found that was suspect, and in the sense of, I always thought either Tony's lying or Tony might be misinformed. So I agree with you that to rewrite that, I don't have a problem with because of that very point.
Yeah.
I was never convinced that that was 100% the truth. My understanding is that there's a deleted scene where Junior does talk to
Julie Ruffalo.
Right.
And so he finds somebody that has...
So there's some connective tissue.
No, I think it was supposed to be he needs to find a way to shield himself from this. So he calls Julie Ruffalo, who's got a beef with Dickie,
right,
and be like, hey, go do this, and I'll make sure there's no repercussions for you because
right,
I'll smooth it over.
Right. But my point is, why does
Junior want to kill Dickie? It doesn't make any sense.
No.
You should have had a scene where you find out that, you know, Dickie somehow... Forget about the laughing at Junior when he slips, which is, you know, I think the Guma says to Junior, everybody was laughing. It wasn't
yeah,
just
right,
Dickie.
No, that's right. Yeah, she does.
There should have had a scene where you find out that, like, oh, Dickie's crew ripped off Junior, you know, unknowingly, or someone in Dickie's crew disrespected Junior, or some real reason for Junior to feel slighted. And not because he slipped and Dickie chuckled.
Right. And I had a conspiracy theory. And then I thought, and then David Chase sort of kind of...
Rained on your parade.
Yeah, he rained on my parade. My conspiracy theory, and I texted you, was because I'm thinking about how things would have really worked. And I think what it would have been possibly a better storyline is you see Junior meeting with Harold, and Junior's like, all right, now I'm going to be your liaison, and I'll give you a better deal.
Yeah.
And like, I don't like this motherfucker either.
Right.
And like, well, and then Harold has some cover.
Yeah.
Right. Then Harold can, they're the ones that are doing it.
And then Junior would be gaining something.
Precisely. Right. That was my conspiracy theory.
It didn't make sense to me why Junior would want Dickie dead.
No, just out of petting, just being petty.
Petty slight.
Right. Right. So that's where I was like, oh, there must be something more to this. And then I was reading an interview with David Chase and he's like, no, it's just because Junior's petty. And right. I was like, well, I don't know if I'm buying that then. You know,
yeah.
Like I think the organized crime part is more convincing than a petty.
Yeah.
Right.
No, and when did you ever see that from Junior?
No, he'd been killing everybody.
Yeah.
He used to get that from everyone all the time.
Right.
Remember one of the best scenes are when Junior gives an order and all the guys look at Tony. He's like, what are you looking at? Right. I just told you. So, I mean, he got that shit all the time from the guy. So what? He didn't kill them. So, I agree with you that, I do not have a problem at all with them reimagining
what happened. I like that.
Yeah.
I just didn't like the way it was executed.
No, I agree. That's a good way to put it. And maybe if they do like another movie or something, they can retcon that and make it more kind of some of those things we're talking about. Like maybe there was a conspiracy and it's not, because if they're just going to leave it the way it is, I agree with you. I'm not buying it.
And it just
I'm not
seems like it. Such a wasted opportunity to have all of this. I'm sure they had stuff written that didn't make it into the film about Tony and his friends. I mean, there was a scene where Artie was with him, but you wouldn't know it unless you listened really closely and he made he said, Artie, come along or something like that. Like, I just feel like you could have made that whole thing so much, that whole subplot, even if you didn't want to make it the centerpiece of the film, even if you didn't want to take the young Tony and make him what the film was about, I still feel like you could have done a better job giving us more color in Tony's life. Because all you really got was, okay, he was worried about his mom. He was someone that liked rock and roll. He was someone that was unmotivated in school.
Bright, but unmotivated.
Right. Yeah. But other than that, you didn't really get much. I wanted more scenes with the young Tony Soprano.
The kid who played him even younger was good too.
He looked
like that. That's what Tony would have looked like, or Gandolfini would have looked like when he was 8 or whatever, 9. But I agree with you. Like the moment where my eyes lit up, and I'm like, this is what I want. Just like the scenes in the house when him and Livia and she's making him dinner.
Yeah.
Like that's the point where you're talking about, like, now I feel at home. This feels comfortable. This is the Sopranos that I remember. Those kind of scenes, Johnny coming home and he's bitching. And like,
one of the best lines of the movie is when he walks in from prison. He's like, all I want to do is bang my guma.
Yeah, take a nap.
And take a nap.
Right. So those things. And even Janice, the woman who played Janice, like you could already see that she's conniving. Like, yeah. Those are the scenes where I lit up and I'm like, okay, this is great. So more than there should have been more of that. So let me ask you, because you have a lot more Hollywood insiders than I know. Am I right to think that what we watched is a mashup of two different visions? That David Chase wants a movie about Dickie Moltisanti, yeah, with black tensions and civil rights kind of stuff. The studio is probably saying, yeah, but you got to have Tony.
I think if it was up to David Chase, the whole story would have taken place in 1967.
Yeah.
And Tony, probably, the only Tony Soprano you would see would be 10-year-old Tony Soprano.
Yeah, in just a couple of scenes,
right,
probably. So, I mean, what can they do now? Because the reviews are mixed.
They're going to do, let's talk business for a second.
Yeah.
Before they decided to roll it out the way they rolled it out, which ruffled a lot of feathers, which it was just to stream it at the same time.
Yeah, Chase was pissed off about,
right,
that.
Right, so they put it up for streaming on October 1st, and they released it to theaters October 1st. But if you're offering people an opportunity to watch it for free on their couch,
yeah,
you're literally leaving hundreds of millions of dollars,
yeah,
on the table. So they don't have they're not going to have a box office, especially after the word of mouth isn't great.
Right.
You're not going to have a box office that's going to leave executives clamoring for follow-ups. Before they made that decision, if they would have done it quote-unquote correctly, which I think would have been putting it into the theaters between, let's say, October 1st and Christmas, and then December 25th, you can start streaming it.
Oh yeah, yeah, that could have been. Yeah.
Then I think it would have been an event film, the way the Marvel films are.
Sure.
And they would have made hundreds of millions of dollars at the box office, even in the era of COVID. I still think they would have.
Yeah.
But they decided not to. So that the business angle affects what the future is.
Right.
So I would have said it was 100% in stone that they were going to start producing a Sopranos prequel television series.
Yeah, right.
With Tony as a teenager.
Right.
Now I would say it's probably 50-50.
And Vera Farmiga, by the way, has been very public that she wants to do it.
Yeah.
She'll do it, yeah.
So,
and I think Gandolfini, too. I think Michael, too, has said he would do it.
So I think there's probably a better than 50-50 chance that a year from now we'll either be readying to watch the new Sopranos television show, which takes place in the 70s, or we will have already consumed it.
I hope. I mean, I we've criticized a lot, but I hope that they do. Yeah. There was enough good there for me to want. I'm interested in exploring that universe more.
Yeah,
that era and stuff.
That's the best part of the movie.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, that's right.
I'm okay with never seeing Dickie Moltisanti again.
Right, right.
All due respect to Alessandro Nivola. Again, he was very good.
Sure.
I can see why within the industry he's respected as a actor's actor.
Yeah.
But I don't need any more of that storyline.
No. So
and I want to know more about Johnny Boy and Junior.
And Harold. I'm interested in seeing how that plays out.
And I want to know, they gave us a glimpse, but I want to know about Eckley DeMeo.
Yes,
the godfather of the DeMeo crime family.
Always been intrigued
by David Chase plays.
Yeah, a cameo.
He doesn't have any lines, but you see that this elderly man is being ushered into a funeral, into the back room to meet with his men, the way that Tony would have meetings at wakes and whatnot, and you see Johnny Boy and Junior talking to the older man.
And that's when younger Tony's like, "I wonder what they talk about."
Yeah, what they talk about,
and And I read, I think it was in Rolling Stone piece. David Chase, they asked him about DeMeo, and they said there were more references to DeMeo in season one, and then you sort of stop. And David Chase just comes. This could be to your point of his, like, so sort of flippant and dismissive he is. He's just like, I just lost interest in it. Like, I just.
He died in prison.
I just didn't want to really talk
about
it.
That's what he said. He died in prison.
And it's like, okay, but he's like the patriarch of this family. Like, some of us are curious. Like,
there was something written early on in the show that was put out where it was kind of like a Sopranos, a guide to the Sopranos.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And they had some backstory. And in Johnny Boy's backstory, it talks about how Johnny Boy had been mentored by Eckley DeMeo.
Oh, okay.
Come up as Eckley DeMeo's driver.
Yeah, that makes sense. That would be cool. Yeah. And I mean, there was one part I liked where I think it was Frank Lucas.
Let's talk about that for a second.
But he goes, when Harold says he's got a problem with the Italians, he goes, DeMeo. And he goes, right. No, Moltisanti. And I like that because it reminded the audience that DeMeo is out there somewhere.
Right.
We don't know a lot about him, but he's out there, you know, in that universe.
So I don't understand how history now tells us that Frank Lucas was this incredibly sophisticated, polished, African American drug don.
Yeah.
It's just accepted as the gospel. And anybody that has studied New York in the 1970s and studied the Harlem drug trade, not to say that Frank Lucas didn't play a role. He did. Him and his group, which was known as the Country Boys, were one of the big drug organizations in the area.
Sure.
But the way that he's being portrayed, I mean, I guess it's becoming like, when I was a kid, Dana Carvey on Saturday Night Live was famous for doing George Bush impressions.
Then
it became where, like, anybody doing a George Bush impression wasn't doing a George Bush impression. They were doing a Dana Carvey impression of George Bush.
Now,
since American Gangster, anyone that is, you know, anything that alludes to Frank Lucas or anytime Frank Lucas is portrayed now, they portray the Denzel Washington version of Frank Lucas, which is just, it's false.
Yeah, he's like the black Michael Corleone. That's kind of what they're going for.
This was a simpleton.
Yeah. Well, he was a country. That's why they called them that. Yeah, they were from the South.
But if you're talking about.
But Lucas, I mean, he's the one that spun that tale, and everyone was buying into it, the Hollywood people, right?
Because
there was really no one really around from that era to challenge that other than historians and journalists.
Or Nikki Barnes, who was in the Witness Protection Program.
Yeah, right.
Nikki Barnes was the sophisticated, polished one.
Yeah, that's
one.
Right, yeah.
It wasn't
Mr.
Lucas.
Mr. Untouchable, right.
Right. Lucas was the, you know, was the minor leagues to Nikki Barnes' major leagues.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to say minor leagues in the sense that he was a minor drug figure.
No,
he wasn't a minor drug figure.
He was pushing a lot of weight.
He was like the Kirkland brand, like the Costco water.
Yeah.
And Nikki Barnes was Fiji water or Boss water.
Yeah,
or
smart water, whatever, yeah.
Smart water.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. I mean, and in fairness, it's a small part of the movie, but it is to your point of, again, not taking into account the authenticity. But I was speaking of that,
what I liked about that though, in sticking with the authenticity factor, is that Frank Lucas had a big, big presence in Newark.
Yes, right.
So
right,
that right. is someone that Harold would have. He wouldn't have gone to Nikki Barnes.
No. That's right. Because, and you don't even get the sense too much from American Gangster. It's sort of like he takes over Bumpy's role as like the Don of Harlem, and when in fact Lucas was most of his
territory was New Jersey,
right? But it was interesting, maybe even more so than the TV series, was how many references to non-fictional gangsters.
Vito Genovese,
right? So they show Frank Lucas, but then there's references to Vito Genovese and Tony Salerno,
right?
Remember, he says, "Who put you up to this, Tony Salerno?" For Fat Tony, right?
Yeah.
The hit on the attempted hit on Moltisanti. And so those were at least three that I noticed. Were there any more? Those were the only three that I picked up on. But in the original TV series, I don't know. There's a few. John Gotti, Sammy the Bull, Elbert Anastasia.
Joe Bonanno.
Yeah. So I guess there were a few in the TV series, but.
So what do you make of the ending? The pinky square thing. I didn't like it. I didn't mind the fact that it ended with Tony standing over Dickie Moltisanti's dead body in the wake. I don't mind that part of it.
Well, let me say first of all, and this was fan service that David Chase did not want, I don't think, but they did it anyhow, is the music.
And no, I loved it. I loved that.
No, look, that was one of my favorite, one of my favorite parts of the film. No,
for sure.
The film ends.
I wanted to binge like all seven seasons right when I heard that. I was like, I'm ready. I'm ready for the TV show again. Yeah. So that I like, but
what is it saying? I still don't know. What's it saying?
Well, that's a good point. You would think that seeing Dicky Moltisanti murdered would actually have the opposite.
That's what I'm saying. Especially
it seems counterintuitive,
right? You see him throw the speakers that
Dicky
had given him stolen speakers.
Right.
And he throws them out the window and yells at his dad.
Right.
I don't want anything to do with your life.
Right, right. So it does seem peculiar that all of a sudden you would think that that would have the that would further cement his view that I don't want anything. I want to remember he says, I got to go to college. I'm going to try to play sports. And you would think that something like that would be so traumatic. It doesn't make why would that inspire him? And unless it like a vengeance thing or something?
Is that what it's?
I don't know. I got the sense
implying?
From the pinky thing and the music. I felt was supposed to be the bridge to the Tony Soprano we know.
I would have liked to see that again. That bridge developed more. Just this kind of faint reference.
Let me ask you a couple of other things too. I got a little bit of time here. I know you guys you got to get out of here, but a lot of The Sopranos was about psychoanalysis and psychiatry. Couple of things, and they would explore things that were, you know, make people uncomfortable. There's, and it had to be in The Sopranos because this was a major part of the show. There had to be this Oedipal moment. And there's a thing where the student counselor is saying, talking about Tony and his mom snuggling up together. Yeah. And in some ways, that seems harmless, and that's what mothers and sons should do when the sons are younger. But when you know the history of the show, you can't help but think, is there a Freudian thing? Because Johnny Soprano's gone a lot. He's in prison. And not to say that Livia did anything inappropriate. With psychoanalysis, people assume, oh, you're talking about actual sex. That's not what the point is. The point is that it's a catharsis. Like, she wants a male partner. And maybe not in the sexual sense, but someone to be there emotionally, physically, and was Tony a substitute? And that maybe we can understand that, but I mean, that can be really unhealthy, and that can fuck you up. And that was part of what Melfi was arguing the whole time, is that your mom fucked you up, dude. And that's what she was trying to tell Tony. He didn't want to hear that.
And you saw the flashes of that in Vera Farmiga's performance.
Right.
Like,
right.
What a... you know, unstable.
Yes, good way to put it.
Misguided.
Yeah,
woman that was trying to navigate motherhood and wifedom, and just had this. It was maybe my favorite scene in the film was the scene where John. Oh, and I said it was my favorite line in the film when Johnny Boy comes home.
Oh yeah,
and she starts, you know, crying. She ruins her own welcome home party by her dramatics, her histrionics.
Right, and that sort of stuff Tony would reference in the show.
And that's the stuff that you know, that was the Livia that you knew from the show.
Right. So that was interesting. But the other part I thought was,
and it's like John, and then even with Johnny Boy, he's like yelling at Livia about the fact that there was a black family moving down the street. Yeah. Like it's Livia's fault.
No, that was good too. Yeah, that he's
what's she gonna do?
He's not. But and he's right. That shows you that he's no bed of roses. He's no like picnic to be around.
No, he was perpetually pissed off.
Right.
Which is I read an interview with John Bernthal. He said, I envisioned him as someone that wherever he was, he wanted to be somewhere else.
Yeah. And right now I. That makes sense. And in some ways, you could see that with Tony. But also, there was this reoccurring thing of undermining Junior's sexuality. Did you pick up on that, too? The woman, the Guma, says, any excuse to not fuck, right? And then...
And then someone else made a comment about Junior not screwing his fiance before that.
Yeah.
Junior not screwing his girlfriend.
Yeah, and then wasn't there another slight to him that, like, his girlfriend was fucking some other dude?
Yeah.
And he didn't mind. He didn't, like... What was that about? Because I don't remember in the TV series. There was the one storyline where they give him a hard time because he goes down on that woman.
Right.
but he's with a woman, right? What do you think? I don't know. Was there anything? Should we read anything more into that? What was this like trying to undermine his sexuality? Like,
he was just kind of making him his whole life in the mob. He was kind of the butt of the joke.
I see.
And Johnny was the one that everyone respected.
I think
that Junior from the first part from the season one, he's this character that always has a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, because he's in the shadow of
like
his,
he's
yeah.
never been respected at any level.
I see.
Whether
I see.
It be business,
I see.
Personal.
Right. So this is just
kind of
you're getting more insight into yeah. that. This has been an attitude for a long time
right, and
in
Junior,
that universe.
And Junior, you know, never got married.
Right.
Never had kids of his own.
Right. Which is unusual in that
right.
world.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Pauly didn't have.
It's even unusual just in general for
yeah.
back,
yeah.
back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just in the underworld. Yeah, I did. I like the guy who played Pauly. I agree with you that maybe it wasn't
no,
written
I didn't
the
have
right
an issue.
Way.
I didn't have an issue with him other than he wasn't really, he was there for window dressing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not sure what else they could have done with him.
No, I would have wanted to see him with Johnny Boy, like as, John,
oh, yes,
as Johnny
yeah,
Boy's
okay.
bodyguard
I agree
and driver.
With you. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. Instead of like he's like Dickie Moltisanti's guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. But yeah, overall I would recommend it. I think, you know, it'd be interesting to hear what people say on social media getting back to us what they think.
I hope he puts out some type of, you know, director's cut or
oh,
deleted
yeah.
scenes or
yeah, I hope so too. But I think you know, for us being hypercritical, it's because we revere the TV show and the expectations were so high. I don't want people to think that the film's not worth watching because I don't believe that that's true. It's worth watching.
It is.
Especially just, for Sopranos fans.
It's, you know, my biggest, you know, if I want to boil my critique down to a sentence or two, it's just uneven.
Yeah, that's a good way
and
to put it.
And there are
yeah.
parts of it that are really, really, really good, really authentic. And then there are parts of it that just fall short, and I'm just kind of like, why are they wasting 5 minutes on this?
Yeah.
Or why are they going down this rabbit hole when there are 10 other rabbit holes I'd rather them
now,
go down?
That's not just us. There are mixed reviews out there, but I haven't followed it up. Have the writers and have they acknowledged the mixed reviews at all? Have they responded to and like what's
I haven't
like David
haven't,
Chase and others have they like because there's some praise out there too. There's some reviews out there that are like oh they nailed it like top to bottom it's fantastic.
I read somewhere where David Chase was like this was inevitable just like the ending.
Oh, I see.
Controversy was inevitable.
I mean that's an easy cop out.
Right.
I mean, I guess, sure, but
David Chase is also kind of like, yeah, you know what? I'm kind of done with this. If other people want to
yeah.
take a shot, I don't have a problem with them. You know, I'll give them my blessing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to make another movie before I die, and I don't want it to be the Sopranos.
Yeah, well, I hope he signs off on other people continuing
yeah.
it, you know, because, I mean, look at the Star Wars franchise.
There's a universe
George Lucas
to explore.
George Lucas doesn't have his
yeah.
fingers on everything in the Star Wars universe. You can let other people,
right?
You know, I mean, I think he's like the Don. He kind of signs off on
yeah.
things, but like you can have other, entrust other people.
There was just,
competent people,
you know,
to do a good job.
In a two-hour movie, we got about a half hour of Tony.
Yeah.
Or Michael Gandolfini playing
yeah, and he
Tony.
Was, and he was great.
I just needed more. It just, that got me so charged up because Michael Gandolfini did such an amazing job. I can't overstate it.
No, I agree with you.
He was the best part of the film. If I had to pick one thing that
right.
was the best part of the movie, it was Michael Gandolfini stepping into James Gandolfini's shoes and embodying
right.
in every aspect a young Tony
no,
Soprano.
No, I agree. And
from the way he walked, to the way he talked, to his mannerisms, to his you know, his on-screen presence.
And I love that he did not act like an arch criminal from day one. I like the fact that it was a process.
You didn't see it, but that, again, if you want to swing the pendulum over, I like that too. I like that a lot. But I would have liked to seen something towards the end of that film
yeah.
that kind of shows us
yeah.
where he's leaning towards.
Yeah.
And you didn't really see you didn't see any seeds of criminality other than the boys will be boys kind of hijinks.
Right.
There was right. nothing in him that you could have said that, oh, I could foresee this
no.
guy going,
I mean,
going into the life behind
you. You see that he's got a temper. But again, that doesn't mean criminality. I mean, I have a fucking temper.
I kind of expected, even though I knew that the Tony Soprano character wasn't going to have a ton of screen time, I expected him to be going with Dickie Moltisanti on jobs.
Oh, yeah,
collections
and
things. In my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's only that one time where he's with him and he sees Harold and, you know.
Yeah.
You remember, but that was sort of incidental. Like, yeah. He wasn't, I don't think Tony was with him to do gangster shit.
Right.
Like, I think he just happened to be in the car with him. Yeah, I mean, but again, maybe this is opening up more for more content. Like, you know what I mean?
I feel like it was also implied that Dickie Moltisanti was not just a father figure, but a mentor to Tony in
the life,
and
mentor.
He wasn't.
No.
At all.
No.
I mean, at all.
No. In fact, he doesn't want Tony to be part of that world.
He starts shunning Tony.
Right.
Because his uncle tells him that if you want to do your nephew a favor, never talk to him again.
Which I like that. I thought that was, again, I like the uncle part, Ray Liotta, because that was like an example of someone who doesn't care and they're going to tell someone even if they don't want to hear it.
I thought it was, we're talking about something I really liked about it was the nuance in that character.
Yeah.
How he was he had fallen in love with jazz.
Right.
When he was in prison, he became a Buddhist.
Buddhist, yeah. Yeah.
I like those little nuances.
No, I did too. I did too. But maybe it will open up this universe for more because you're right. We didn't see Tony really any examples of his going to be a gangster.
I wanted two or three scenes with him and Jackie and Ralphie.
Yeah.
And
well, I will say this. Younger Tony is running a betting operation.
Which is funny.
In middle school.
Which is one of the funnier scenes of the film. He's running a numbers op.
He's
in
sixth grade
school.
Or something.
Oh, that's great.
So there was,
the fat kid in the band stands up. I won. I won the lottery.
Right.
My number is.
Right. So there was, I mean, there was that, if you want to,
he hijacked a soft ice cream truck, too.
But right, and then that, but as you point out, that was more of like juvenile delinquency. Yeah. That wasn't.
But even the numbers as a 10-year-old was more.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess.
It was like me when I was 13 and running a betting pool for the NCAA tournament. I got in trouble with my principal because there was no gambling allowed in our school.
Yeah, or selling squares or something like that. But I guess the point was because you know who his father is and who his uncles are, that you're supposed to read more into it. Because you're right, that is a sort of another, like, could be considered a harmless juvenile, you know, experience. But because of his family,
even the way that it's marketed. I'm looking at my phone right now. The freaking poster says who made Tony Soprano?
Yeah, we don't know.
And even I know it's like a double entendre, but you don't even really see. Again, it was underdeveloped.
Yeah, I mean, I'm.
When you try to serve too many masters, you're doing the art an injustice because you're not servicing the art that needs. You're not giving it enough time to breathe. You can't go off into 15 different corridors of narration and expect to do all 15 narrative threads justice.
By the way, have back to the authenticity thing, have you, maybe I'm nitpicking here, but again, I'm not sure who was made and who wasn't. I mean, Johnny and Junior, I would say for sure. Probably Dickie. I don't know if those younger guys were made yet.
I
don't think so. They would have been too young. Maybe Paulie. Even Paulie would have been too young, I think. But can you think of examples where a father is an associate, a high-earning associate who doesn't get his button but his kid does?
No.
I'm not saying it's never happened, but I, off the top of my head, I can't think of an example. Can you?
Benji.
Oh, okay. All right. In the
in Springfield.
Springfield. Okay.
Benji's dad. I mean, Benji's dad wasn't a gangster, but he was an associate.
Okay. So he was around the life.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not.
I agree. I think it's the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, it seems to me, right? It seems like either your dad had nothing to do with it or he was a made guy. So, like, that kind of gray area, I couldn't think of any.
Yeah, but there's a scene in early on in The Sopranos where Dr. Melfi asks Tony something about his dad and where he stands in comparison to his dad. And he's like, I'm 42 years old and I'm already 10 steps above where my dad went.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so Johnny was a soldier in this movie?
In this movie?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We know he was a captain.
He was a captain
at
some point. I'm thinking he was a captain. I think in the time of the show started in the late 90s, there were two separate crews. There was Junior's crew.
Yeah.
And then there was the Soprano crew.
Right.
And Junior's crew eventually became Gigi's crew, which eventually became Ralphie's crew, which eventually became Vito's crew.
No, that was Jackie. That was Richie's crew. That was Jackie's crew and then Richie.
Okay, you're right.
Then Ralphie, then Vito.
Yeah, but I think Richie...
They brought Gigi over.
I think... Oh, they did?
They took... Tony reassigned Gigi.
All right. And that was... And Patsy Parisi.
Right. And part of that was a fuck you to Junior.
Yeah. Okay, I'm
remembering. So, I mean, I don't know, like... I guess,
was a Parisi reference in the film.
Was there?
They just said something about so-and-so Parisi.
Oh, no shit. I missed that. But I would say, I mean, again, maybe we're, getting into the weeds here, but the fact that all of that was unclear, I mean, one of the things that I loved about The Sopranos was they would talk about he's a captain, he's a soldier. It was very transparent and very, and I liked it. Because even, like, when you go back to classics, like The Godfather can get very murky.
Yeah, it's very ambiguous.
It's very right about who's who and what their status is. And The Sopranos was always, like, you know, the very precise about who
was
who.
And you don't
who.
See any other parts of the family. In the scene at the wake, you see Ecole DeMeo.
Right.
But outside, you're not seeing any other
right
DeMeo crime family figures outside right. of the orbit that is Dickie yeah. Moltisanti, Jr. and Johnny Boy Soprano.
Right. And presumably the DeMeo crime family was bigger.
It had to have been
a lot bigger
in 1967
than what we watched in the 90s and 2000s. So that's another curious thing. But even like the Joey Diaz character, was he a made guy? I don't know.
They only list him as Buddha. They don't
right.
even tell you.
Right. And he like gives shit back to like Dickie and Junior. So then I was like, okay, is he a made guy? Can he talk like that to them? But that was unclear to me. And what about the fat guy that gets killed? Is he supposed to be somebody? Is he supposed to be anyone?
Carmine, the character's name is Carmine Cattuso.
Is that a name from the TV show? Okay. So that was
he's
just
played by a guy that I actually know personally, named Nick Vallelonga, who won the Oscar.
Oh, that's
Oscar.
Your guy.
Yeah, won the Oscar for Green Book.
Yeah.
His dad was Tony Lip, who played Carmine Lupertazzi in the film.
Oh, that's a nice...
Sorry, played Carmine Lupertazzi in the show.
That's a nice round. That's a nice circle there. Oh, that's right. That's your guy. I didn't realize that was him.
He's a screenwriter, and I'm working with him on a project right now.
So he plays the guy who gets whacked.
Yeah.
That's cool. I don't...
In the Christmas trees?
Yeah, I don't remember if you told me that he was going to be in that or not.
At first, there was rumors that he was playing Hesh.
Oh, right.
But then when I actually met him, I was like, you're playing Hesh in The Sopranos? He's like, no, that's just a rumor.
Yeah, okay.
I'm playing a guy that nobody's ever heard before.
Okay, and we don't know if he's a made guy either. I mean, maybe he's younger, or sort of. Not as young as
him and Joey
guys.
Diaz both get killed. Johnny Boy Soprano gets shot at, and for some reason, the leader of this insurgency is kind of let off the hook. I didn't get that.
Right, and when associates get killed, it is different. Like, we know a case study here where it seems like some of the Jackalone's guys got killed, and there didn't seem to be any reprisals. And we don't know what that's about. Was it because Tony Jack signed off on it?
I think they gave okays on it.
Yeah, right. That's probably why. But right, the protocol is different if it's an associate. But you would think in that situation, the politics of it, even if he whacked out an associate, there would be reprisals. Yeah. And it seems like, no. In fact, Harold is thriving. He moves into a better neighborhood. He's got a wad of cash. So it'll be interesting to see, but you want to, as we sign off, you want to update us on the BMF stuff?
So I was on set today, Black Mafia Family television show and the Black Mafia Family docuseries. The first episode of the series premiered on September 26th on Starz Network, had phenomenal pilot. Ratings. The pilot had ratings that went through the roof, and have already got the show has already been renewed for a second season. And then the docuseries that we're working on will premiere the night of the season finale, and there'll be an 8-part docuseries that you can watch after the first season finishes up. And it's been a pleasure getting to work with 50 Cent and the G Unit people of the Starz Network, Jigsaw. Productions, which is Alex Gibney's outfit. They do a lot of work with HBO. And everyone that was involved in Power, is a lot of the people that were involved in Power are now doing the Black Mafia Family show. The showrunners, Randy Huggins, who was a Detroit native, went to St. Martin de Porres, worked on Power, now is showrunning Black Mafia Family, which is a smash hit right out of the gate. And I'm proud to be a part of it. I'm proud to be affiliated with it. I love having my brand connected to the story of Black Mafia Family. And we've devoted episodes on the OG podcast to telling the story of BMF, Big Meech, Southwest Tee, and we will continue doing that. You know,
yeah, hopefully you can get some of these people on our show to talk about you know, what's going on there.
Yep.
Because we've interviewed the law enforcement side and the legal team side of that story, but we've never had BMF.
We'll get a OG BMF on here before
that'd be awesome.
Before it's too late. And so yeah, so check it out. Again, super, super high ratings. If you like true crime, if you like, you know, throwback to the 1980s, you like that kind of music, the way people dressed.
And this is all Detroit stuff.
All Detroit.
This isn't
right
Atlanta
now.
Yet.
Right. So you're not gonna get into the Atlanta stuff probably season two or three. So yeah, first season is all Detroit, ton of references.
Are they gonna have any of the Italian stuff in there? I know BMF didn't actually interact with them,
no.
But you know how they write
They're writing White Boy Rick into the story with Eminem playing White Boy Rick.
Right.
Snoop Dogg's in it. He's playing a religious leader.
Yeah. Has he appeared in it yet?
Nah, he's not yet. Okay. Avon Barksdale from The Wire, the actor Wood Harris, who played Avon Barksdale. He plays the Flannery Brothers. Mentor in the show, his name is Black Pat. In reality, it was kind of a composite of E.D. Boyd and Harold Mills. So it's, you know, a lot of Detroit flavor. So check it out. I'm proud to be a part of it. I'll keep on giving you guys all the latest information, and we'll see where we go from here.
Well, that's exciting. Thanks for sharing that with us, and thanks for everyone listening. Check us out on social media. Original Gangsters Podcast, Jimmy Bucciolato, Scott Bernstein.
Out.
See you next time.